This is the Healthy Living Podcast on OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. OWL Radio broadcasts to homes in San Antonio, the Hill Country, San Antonio Methodist Hospitals, and via online streaming and smartphone access. Welcome, I am Martha Attee. This program is being recorded on April 24, 2023. Today's articles include How to Make a Healthy Breakfast, Is Tofu Good for You, and Just 2 minutes of Walking Is Good for You. The first article is from the Health section of the New York Times and is written by Rachel Rabkin Peachman. The title is Secrets of a Healthy Breakfast. Each day, an estimated 10 to 20% of adults in the United States skip breakfast. And that, nutrition experts say, may be a mistake. Not only does a morning meal provide you the fuel you need to start your day, but numerous studies have found that eating breakfast regularly is associated with a range of health benefits. These include reduced risks for obesity, cardiovascular disease, and type 2 diabetes, as well as improved short-term memory in adults, better school performance in children, and better diet quality overall, said Catherine Starr, a registered dietitian and associate professor of medicine at Duke University School of Medicine. Dr. Starr said, "All of our meals are important. I don't think breakfast is the most important meal, but it kickstarts the process for our body to function properly." To maintain healthy blood sugar, energy, and fullness levels until your next meal, getting the right balance of protein, fiber, and unsaturated fats at breakfast is important, said Lauren Harris Pincus, registered dietitian in New Jersey. This roughly translates to at least 20 grams of protein, 8 to 10 grams of fiber, and 10 to 15 grams of unsaturated fats, totaling about 300 to 350 calories. But it's important not to get hung up on the numbers, said Alice Lichtenstein, a professor of nutrition science and policy at the Friedman School of Nutrition Science at Tufts University. Your nutrient needs will depend on your weight, activity level, age, health conditions, and personal preferences. More important, Dr. Lichtenstein said, is focusing on what makes you feel energized and sated. So many times we've tried to give people formulas, and if you look at dietary patterns and scores in the U.S., we're not doing that well as far as diet quality goes. So what is the ideal breakfast? Dr. Lichtenstein said, it's whatever makes your body work best. One thing to prioritize when planning your morning meal is protein. Many Americans consume more than enough protein throughout the day, but they often don't get enough at breakfast. Instead, they opt for foods high in refined sugars or other carbohydrates, such as bagels, pastries, or energy bars. If they do prioritize protein, they frequently choose foods high in saturated fats, such as bacon or sausage, which can increase the risk for cardiovascular disease. Your body needs protein to maintain your muscle mass, metabolism, and physical strength, among other things, but it can use only about 25 to 35 grams of protein per meal for those purposes. If you consume more protein in one sitting, your body will either use it as energy, store it as fat, or excrete it. If you skip breakfast or don't eat protein at breakfast, you lose that opportunity because you can't double up on the protein later, said Ms. Harris Pincus. Calcium, vitamin D, potassium, and fiber are commonly called shortfall nutrients. That's because people in the United States often don't get enough of them. Over time, deficiencies in such nutrients can lead to a variety of problems, including weak bones, poor gut health, and high blood pressure. So it happens that many healthy breakfast foods in the United States are packed with those nutrients. Most fortified cow's milk contains calcium, vitamin D, and potassium. Most fortified cereals contain vitamin D. Just be sure to choose those high in fiber and low in added sugars. Bananas, citrus, and many dried fruits have potassium, and oats are rich in fiber. Ms. Pincus said, "So when you think about something like a bowl of whole grain cereal and milk with some fruit, that really makes a dent in those shortfall nutrients. Make breakfast into whatever you want it to be. You don't have to confine yourself to standard breakfast fare to get a mix of nutrients in the morning," said Josephine Connolly Shunan, the director of nutrition at Stony Brook Medicine. "Any whole plant-based food is going to have lots of phytonutrients. Phytonutrients are antioxidants that protect your cells from damage. These foods also contain fiber, which helps you stay full and supports gut health. Coffee and tea can also provide some antioxidants and be part of a nutritious breakfast. Just don't overdo it on the sugar or cream." Another dietitian, Amanda Sauceda, who works in Long Beach, California, is a proponent of expanding breakfast to include anything you might eat at any other time of the day. "I don't love breakfast food, but I hate how my body feels if I don't eat breakfast." Her go-to morning meal is often a version of that previous night's dinner, which might be Chinese food or grilled chicken and vegetables. "I've been known to eat whatever we had the night before and wrap it in a tortilla and make a burrito," she says. "I'm still getting my food groups, even though it might not be what you traditionally eat for breakfast." Dr. Connolly Shunan said that taking your time and enjoying your food is important. "Eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full," she said. And breakfast doesn't have to be the first thing in the morning. If you wake up and go to an exercise class at 7:30 a.m., you might have a few bites of something if you go hungry to the class and come back and finish your breakfast, said Dr. Connolly Shunan. "Try whatever works for you." Many of the breakfast ideas the nutritionists recommend are simple to prepare. They're nutritious and delicious. Here are some options to get you started. Overnight oats made with milk, chia seeds, diced fruit, and dried fruit. A whey protein smoothie with kale or spinach, fruit, or Greek yogurt. Whole wheat toast with a nut butter and sliced strawberries. Greek yogurt with slivered almonds or walnuts and berries. A whole wheat breakfast burrito with a mix of eggs and egg whites, cheese, beans, and salsa. Steel-cut oats or another high-fiber cereal with milk and whey protein powder, almonds and walnuts, and sliced melon. Whole grain toast with cream cheese and lox. Leftover grilled chicken, roasted potatoes, and green beans. Roasted potato slices on a bed of spinach, topped with an egg. Tofu scramble with skim mozzarella cheese, vegetables, avocado, and whole wheat toast. Our next article is titled, Is Tofu Good for You? Concerns about soy foods like tofu have been raised in the past. Here's what the research and experts say. This was written by Alice Callahan and printed on April 4, 2023 in the New York Times Health section. Question: I've heard conflicting stories about tofu. It's either a great source of protein or loaded with estrogen and therefore unhealthy. Which is true? If tofu and other soy foods were interviewing for a spot on your weekly meal rotation, they would offer an impressive resume of nutritional credentials. A 3-ounce serving of tofu, for instance, can provide between 4 and 14 grams of protein, depending on the style of tofu. And that also includes all 9 of the essential amino acids. Tofu also supplies B vitamins, healthy unsaturated fatty acids, and minerals like calcium, magnesium, zinc, and iron, said Amy Braganini, a dietitian and spokeswoman for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Yet soy foods are also burdened by an unsavory reputation. For instance, people routinely ask if soy foods are linked with cancer, a concern stemming from their relatively high levels of isoflavones, plant-based compounds that are structurally similar to the hormone estrogen. The presence of isoflavones has also led to the worry that soy might negatively affect fertility or give men more feminine characteristics. But overall, the studies have shown that including soy foods in your diet is not only safe, it may also benefit your heart and metabolic health. And while it's true that isoflavones in soy can weakly mimic estrogen, they also seem to have an anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, and antioxidant properties. This is a quote from Dr. Ki Sung, Associate Professor of Nutrition at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. One historical worry about soy has been that its estrogen-like isoflavones might promote breast cancer. But many studies have shown that women who eat higher amounts of soy foods have no greater risk, or even a lower risk, of developing breast cancer than those who eat little or no soy, said Dr. Xiao Yu Shu, a professor of epidemiology at Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. The protective association is strongest in studies conducted in Asian countries, she noted, where soy is commonly consumed from infancy to old age. In 2012, Dr. Xu and her colleagues found that among women in China and the United States who had been diagnosed with breast cancers, those who had ate about half a serving or more of soy foods per day after their diagnosis were less likely to have a recurrence than those who ate smaller amounts. Before this study, Dr. Xu said doctors had sometimes warned breast cancer patients to avoid soy foods. Today, the American Institute for Cancer Research says that limited evidence suggests that women who eat moderate amounts of soy may be more likely to survive and perhaps have fewer recurrences of breast cancer. There is a concern that soy might interfere with fertility, including by affecting sperm count or quality, the ability to conceive, or testosterone or estrogen levels in men. That idea has also not held up to the evidence, says Dr. Su. Some small studies have found that soy can modestly reduce menopause-related hot flashes, but these results have been mixed. Dr. Sun from the Harvard School of Public Health says there's some evidence that including soy in your diet can benefit your heart. He led a study published in 2020 that found that consuming more soy isoflavones, particularly from tofu, was associated with a moderately lower risk of coronary heart disease. Another study of nearly 120,000 healthcare professionals in the United States, Dr. Sun and his colleagues found that during the more than 30 years of follow-up, those who consumed at least one serving of tofu or soy milk per week were 15 to 16% less likely to die than those who ate less than one serving per month. Dr. Sun also said, "It's almost a no-brainer that people should choose tofu and other plant-based proteins instead of animal-source proteins, particularly those from processed and red meats, which are associated with a higher risk of heart disease, diabetes, colorectal cancer, and earlier death." And he added, "Eating more plant-based foods can not only improve human health, but also improve the health of the globe, because protein sources like soy, beans, peas, and nuts have lower greenhouse gas footprints than meat, cheese, or eggs." How do you incorporate more soy foods into your diet? As a dietitian, Mrs. Braganini has found that tofu is sometimes a hard sell when she recommends it to clients. "They just roll their eyes," she said, "but they've never really even tried it." Tofu and tempeh, which is made from fermented soybeans, take on virtually any flavor profile and can be baked, sautéed, or simmered in a sauce. If those blocks of soy protein just aren't interesting to you, Ms. Braganini suggested snacking on soy nuts, steaming some edamame, or making smoothies with unsweetened soy milk. The dietitian encourages people to include one or two servings of soy foods in their diet daily. But she cautioned against just using isoflavin supplements, which can contain far greater amounts of the compounds than are found in foods. And as with all supplements, they are not well regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. "If a little is good, a lot is not necessarily better," she said. And you're listening to the Healthy Living Podcast on Owl Radio. Our next article is titled, "Just 2 minutes of walking after a meal is surprisingly good for you." A new paper suggests that it takes far less exercise than was previously thought to lower blood sugar after eating. By Rachel Fairbank, this was printed in the New York Times Health section, August 4th, 2022. Walking after a meal, conventional wisdom says, helps clear your mind and aids in digestion. Scientists have also found that going for a 15-minute walk after a meal can reduce blood sugar levels, which can help ward off complications such as type 2 diabetes. But as it turns out, even just a few minutes of walking can activate these benefits. In a meta-analysis published in the journal Sports Medicine, researchers looked at the results of 7 studies that compared the effects of sitting versus standing or walking on measures of heart health, including insulin and blood sugar levels. They found that light walking after a meal in increments of as little as 2 to 5 minutes had a significant impact on moderating blood sugar levels. "Each small thing you do will have benefits, even if it's a small step," said Dr. Kershaw Patel, a preventative cardiologist at Houston Methodist Hospital, who was not involved in that study. Very light walking reduces blood sugar levels. In the five studies that the paper evaluated, none of the participants had prediabetes or type 2 diabetes. The remaining two studies looked at people with and without such illnesses. Participants were asked to either stand or walk for 2 to 5 minutes every 20 to 30 minutes over the course of a full day. All seven studies showed that just a few minutes of light intensity walking after a meal were enough to significantly improve blood sugar levels compared to, say, sitting at a desk or plopping down on the couch. When participants went for a short walk, their blood sugar levels rose and fell more gradually. For people with diabetes, avoiding sharp fluctuations in blood sugar levels is a critical component in managing their illness. It's also thought that sharp spikes and crashes in blood sugar levels can contribute to developing type 2 diabetes. Standing also helped lower blood sugar levels, although not to the degree of light walking did. Quote, "Standing did have a small benefit," said Aidan Buffy, a graduate student at the University of Limerick in Ireland and an author on the paper, said. "Compared to sitting or standing, light intensity walking was a superior intervention," he said. That's because light walking requires more active engagement of muscles than standing and uses the fuel from the food at a time when there is a lot of it circulating in the bloodstream. "Your muscles will soak up some of that excess glucose," said Jesse Inchaupe, author of the book, quote, "Glucose Revolution, The Life-Changing Power of Balancing Your Blood Sugar." "You still have the same meal, but the impact on your body will be lessened," she said. Walking within 60 to 90 minutes after eating delivers the best results. Although light walking at any time is good for your health, a short walk within 60 to 90 minutes of eating a meal can be especially useful in minimizing blood sugar spikes, as that is when the blood sugar levels tend to peak. Also recommended, getting up to do housework or finding other ways to move your body. This short amount of activity will also enhance other dietary changes that people may be making to control their blood sugar levels. Dr. Ashley, a cardiologist from Stanford University who was not associated with the study, said, "Moving even a little bit is worthwhile and can lead to measurable changes, as these studies showed, in your health markers." Mini walks are more practical during the workday. Mr. Buffy, whose research focuses on physical activity interventions in workplace environments, noted that a mini walk of 2 to 3 minutes is more practical during the workday. "People are not going to get up and run on a treadmill or run around the office," he said, "but they could get some coffee or even go for a stroll down the hallway." For people working from home, he suggested a short walk around the block between Zoom meetings or after lunch. "The more we normalize mini walks during the workday," Mr. Buffy said, "the more feasible they will be. If you are in a rigid environment, that's when the difficulties may come. If you cannot take those few minutes to take a walk," Dr. Ashley said, "standing will get you some of the way there." The benefits of physical activity are never all or nothing, Dr. Patel said, but instead exist on a continuum. It's a gradual effect of more activity, better health, he said. Each incremental step, each incremental stand or brisk walk appears to have a benefit. We have time for one more article. Moderate drinking has no health benefits. Analysis of decades of research finds. Also from the New York Times, written by Ronnie Karen Rabin. For decades, scientific studies suggested moderate drinking was better for most people's health than not drinking at all, and could even help them live longer. A new analysis of more than 40 years of research has concluded that many of those studies were flawed and that the opposite is true. The review found that the risks of dying prematurely increase significantly for women once they drink 25 grams of alcohol a day. This is less than 2 standard cocktails containing 1.5 ounces of distilled spirits, or 2 12-ounce beers, or 2 5-ounce glasses of wine. The risks to men increase significantly at 45 grams of alcohol a day, or just over 3 drinks. The new report, which analyzed more than 100 studies of almost 5 million adults, was not designed to develop drinking recommendations, but to correct for methodology problems that plagued many of the older observational studies. Those reports consistently found that moderate drinkers were less likely to die of all causes, including those not related to alcohol consumption. Most of those studies were observational, meaning they could identify links or associations, but they could be misleading and did not prove cause and effect. Scientists said that the older studies failed to recognize that light and moderate drinkers had a myriad other healthy habits and advantages, and that the abstainers used as a comparison group often included former drinkers who had given up alcohol after developing health problems. Tim Stockwell, a scientist from the Canadian Institute for Substance Use Research, said, "When you compare this unhealthy group to those who go on drinking, it makes the current drinkers look more healthy and like they have lower mortality." Once Dr. Stockwell and his colleagues corrected for these errors, he said, "Lo and behold, the supposed health benefits of drinking shrink dramatically and become non-statistically significant." Dr. Stockwell said that the comparisons of moderate drinkers with non-drinkers were flawed for numerous reasons. People who abstain completely from alcohol are a minority, and those who aren't teetotalers for religious reasons are more likely to have chronic problems, to have a disability, or to be from lower income backgrounds. Moderate drinkers tend to be moderate in all ways. They tend to be wealthier or are more likely to exercise or to eat a healthy diet and are less likely to be overweight. They even have better teeth, scientists said. Canada's new guidelines from January 2023 say that consuming even 2 standard drinks a week is associated with health risks, and 7 or more weekly drinks carrying a high level of risk. Current U.S. dietary guidelines are nowhere near as strict, recommending men limit themselves to 2 drinks or less a day, and women to 1 or less per day. You have been listening to the Healthy Living Podcast, recorded on April 24, 2023. If you have any questions or comments, please call OWL Radio at 210-829-4223. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Martha Etty. Thank you for listening, and goodbye from OWL Radio.